Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTellier, along with Cullen Steele, running things behind the scenes. Jeff Nowak will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. At 4:20, just in a little while from now, we'll have on with us the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, as the Fighting Tigers take on UCLA. And you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870, 2:30 Saturday afternoon. And you can hear it here on the Big 870 and free on the Odyssey app. And Herb Tyler and I, we're going to be coordinating and supervising 10 a.m. till 12:30. We'll be at Acme Oyster House doing the pregame coverage for the Tigers and the Bruins. At 4:40 today, Ronnie Rance, former LSU pitcher, host of Sports Shorts, and president and CEO of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation. They made the announcements of the 2025 inductees, and we'll have Ronnie on to give us the formal. One of them's Andrew Whitworth. Big Whit became quite a player. And, man, when you can play tackle in the NFL in your 40s, man, God bless you. He was some kind of athlete, tremendous offensive lineman. To think, you know, LSU ran through that span with Kevin Mawai, Alan Faneca, Andrew Whitworth, Witt is in the 2025 Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, and we'll get Ronnie to give us all the guys in there. Also, Joe Sherman goes in this year, so congratulations to him. 5:20, Brad Evans, who is the host of BetMGM Tonight and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, will join us to give us his take on this weekend's game, Saturday and Sunday, college and pro football. So we'll have Brad on at 6 o'clock. Jeff Nowak takes over. And at 7:25, he'll have Greg Allman on. Greg's been a regular with us. He covers the NFC South for Fox Sports and talking about the fact they got two teams in the NFC South that are undefeated. And other than the Saints' big victory this Sunday against Dallas, man, Tampa Bay goes to Detroit, and they walking wounded go in there, and they beat the Lions on their own home turf. Baker Mayfield having just a carryover from last season. So the 2-0 Tampa Bay Bucks, 2-0 certainly New Orleans Saints, and a lot of people surprised certainly with the Saints, but they surprised too that the Bucks at this stage are 2-0, 1-1 with the Falcons, and man, the Panthers. People thinking they would win 5 or 6 games. I know we had Jake DeLome on, and Jake was telling me, man, they'd be lucky to get 3 wins all year. And so we had a texter sent me this late, right before I left yesterday, asked me, is the trade over? Is there anything left? Yes. The Bears get the Panthers' second-round pick in 2025. So that's the final piece that most likely will be the 33rd overall pick in the draft. So, yes. So I can't think of the texters. He actually put his name, but he asked about, is it over? And it's not. They actually do have to give up their 2025 second-round pick to the Bears. So, man, the Bears, they better fix that offensive line to help Caleb Williams. Their offensive line really did not play well. Certainly, they went up against a top unit with the Houston Texans. That defensive line's really good, but my goodness, you see the growing pains of a young quarterback in Caleb Williams, just like you see it in Denver with Bo Nix. Jaden Daniels can run around and make some plays, but man, they got inside the 10-yard line twice, had a couple of false starts, and they were limited to field goals, but they pulled out a W against the Giants, who may get the second overall pick in the draft. If the Panthers are bad, but the Giants are sort of staring right at them. Injury report for the Saints as they prepare for the Philadelphia Eagles this coming Sunday. And you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 and free on the Odyssey app. Who didn't participate today? No surprise, DeMarco Jackson. With the calf injury. Same with Kalen Saunders with the calf injury. Taysom Hill with the chest injury did not participate. And I think they got some sound that will play you in the 6 o'clock hour with Dennis Allen talking about it. I do know one thing. Taysom, he was the guest speaker last night at the St. Charles Catholic Touchdown Club. So he did make it there. And well, he wasn't getting hit, or he wasn't hitting anybody at the Touchdown Club. But he did go there to speak. And so sounds as though the news is encouraging as far as him probably playing this week, but he did not participate in practice today. And Landon Young, with a foot injury, did not participate. Limited Marshawn Lattimore with the hamstring. At least that's good news that he is back out on the practice field, but it was limited. Taliase Fuaga, and I suspect that Fuaga is going to be on this injury report all year long with the back. He got a lumbago that sort of is acting up on him. But if he plays like that at 80%, I'd hate to see him play. I'd love to see him play at 100% because he was pounding people in the running game. And we've seen this team has become running a lot toward the left, toward his side of the field, along with Eric McCoy at center, who's doing a fabulous job there. And you got a journeyman left guard in Lucas Patrick, who's bounced around this league, Packers, Bears, and, man, they're getting it done when they run the football on the left side. Also limited today, Tyrann Mathieu with a heel injury. He was limited. And Cedric Wilson with an abdominal injury. He was limited. So full practice today, though, for Rashid Shaheed, who had a little bit of a hip injury, but he was full practice today, along with Jalen Ford, who's been battling a hamstring, left, right. But he was a full participant in practice today. So good news. And the fact that Taysom Hill would appear at a Touchdown Club and he's there but didn't practice today, we'll find out a little bit more about the injury. They just listed as a chest injury, but anytime that's there, you never know kind of what kind of gets banged up, and especially the way he plays, because he's pedal to the metal. That could happen on any play with him. And I hate to say this, but early in his career, when he was a quarterback at BYU, he was hurt virtually every year at BYU. He had something that was hurt that cost him games that he didn't get to play. And as he gets older now, something that maybe you would have come back after a day or so, it may take you a little bit longer, but he's such a big part of this attack, and you can't compare him to anyone. I know somebody said, Mike, what about Frank Gifford? Well, I've seen film of Frank Gifford play. I didn't watch him in person play, but Frank actually played running back, flanker, wide receiver, return kicks, played some safety with the Giants. He's the last guy to play all those positions out on the football field. And Frank, I think, retired in 64. So I'd have been a little young to remember Frank Gifford playing. But I do watch the film, and I heard him broadcasting for many, many years. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. And we'll have on with us the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers, Chris Blair, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Cullen Steele in studio, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers, Chris Blair. Chris, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really enjoy it. And what a weekend for the Saints and the Tigers, huh?
Whoa. So Herb Tyler and I, we at Acme Oyster House. We watching the end of the game. And so when they kicked the field goal at the end, that was one lady's voice that was pretty loud. And she was like, "Oh, no." Okay, because when you first saw it get kicked, you thought it was maybe sneak in, and then it goes off to the side, then the place burst up. But Herb and I look at one another because the initial reaction is, oh, my God, maybe she's seeing something we didn't see. Maybe there's a flag on the play. But and it swings off. You talk about a crazy game. That's a crazy one because, okay, you spot them 17 points. You fight back. You see the ebbs and flow of a game, like few, and this is what, the second largest comeback since the 70s for LSU to come back and do it on the road. It wasn't a pretty game, but you don't get nothing for style points.
No, it goes down as a W. And we were joking earlier this morning in the office, Mike, that a couple of weeks, three, four, five, 6 weeks from now, depending on how the season goes, all you know is there's a W by that game. And that's, you know, all that really matters. And, you know, it's interesting you talk about, you know, the back and forth and the ebbs and flows. You know, I credit both teams, really. There were 22 penalties, almost 200 yards. We talked about it on the radio from the very beginning. It seemed like every flag there was a conference. The game went nearly 4 hours, and this is one of the few times I can't blame the TV guys. This was just the conferences and huddles between penalties. So it almost felt like even though a team would get some momentum, and obviously South Carolina had it to start to get that 17-0 lead, you know, once LSU got the score by Caden Durham, who was just phenomenal as a freshman, once they kind of got their feet settled, it really was hard for either team, I think, between some of the big plays by the opposing defenses, and I think just the way the game flowed, that nobody ever really got into a true rhythm. There were little pieces of it, and then there would be a wrench thrown in the gears, and then you had to kind of build yourself back up again. And again, I give both teams credit for that, but you know, that's a heck of a win. There were some certain bright spots, and you know, I listened to Coach Kelly Monday. I'm sure you did as well as Tiger fans. It was interesting to me that, you know, he really pressed upon how important it is now that they've got new coordinators, they've got new coaches, they've got a bevy of true freshmen that are playing already, Mike, and they also have the transfers that come in. And he really, you know, digged down on the fact that now they've got three games of game film. And I think reading between the lines, that's kind of like, okay, now we're getting an idea who the personnel needs to be. And then secondly, how do we put them in a position to succeed and maximize their talent and skill? And it'd be great if you could roll that out there week one, and I'm sure that's what Coach Kelly and company want to be able to eventually do. But that's why I'm optimistic. I think the fact that they got the win the way they got the win is going to help them moving forward. And I think it came at a great time because you've got two home games out of conference, UCLA, then South Alabama. You roll into the first of your bye weeks before you really start that continued gauntlet of the SEC. I'm optimistic over the next couple of weeks to see how this Tiger team works based on personnel and, again, drawing up the schemes that will be successful. Because if you look at the Nichols game and you look at the South Carolina game, there were some big plays given up, and you got to eliminate those. But I thought they did a pretty good job on third down, especially as the game wore on. And I think they really locked down defensively as the game went on. They just got to be able to put that together for four quarters. And I know that's easier said than done. But the roadmap is there.
At least they're getting off the field on third down. We didn't see that at all last year. Pete Jenkins has a story. And is in the Florida game. And, man, Jaden Daniels, he gets the ball. And I think he threw one short pass. And he takes off running. And he scores. And Pete greets him on the field, and, man, he hugs him, and he said, "Jaden, man, I love you. This may be the greatest performance I've ever seen in Tiger Stadium, but you scored too damn fast. Now I got to put my defense back on the field." And Jaden tell him, "Coach, don't worry about it. If they score fast, we're going to score fast." And Pete was like, "Man, okay, this is a 22-year-old young man telling me this, but don't worry about it, Coach. You know, I got it." And just couldn't get off the field. I think for LSU fans, the big play, giving up those chunk plays, I think that's the thing that they've got to eliminate. Come on, if you're going to go down field and score, you got to earn it. And I think, you know, seeing Rocket Sanders making those long runs, a quarterback for South Carolina making the long runs, I think that's the big kind of, hey, we got to get this fixed. Because when we're going to play the Ole Miss and Alabamas of the world, man, they don't care about, you know, you getting your defense fixed. All they worried about is scoring.
No, I think you're 100% right. I mean, I think there's an aggressive nature to Coach Baker, which I welcome. You know, there were times over the last 2 years where it almost felt like LSU's defense, Mike, was, let's don't get beat. But it wasn't an attacking style. So I was impressed with Coach Baker, you know, what he did at Missouri and even his time here as an assistant coach. So I like that. I just think sometimes, you know, there's some guys learning how to set the edge. I mean, we talk about, you know, the either side of the defensive front. You talk about the linebackers. And we spent a lot of time Saturday in the South Carolina game talking about the LSU secondary when it comes to the run game. and stopping the run. And there were times they were a little over aggressive. They peaked in, and that's how you had the 67-yard run by Sanders and then the 75-yard run by Sellers. So, again, I think there's that can be cleaned up. That can be taken care of. They can create a little more discipline there. Get their eyes right, knowing that where, you know, the cornerbacks are responsible for a run game. And, I listened to Ashton Stamps yesterday, the LSU corner, and he talked about it. He said, look, we get all the glory for going out and deflecting passes and getting interceptions, but we understand now our job is also very important in the run game. And when you look at those couple of huge run plays that went for scores against Nichols and Guggenheim with, that incredible run, and then the two for South Carolina, again, those are things that will be fixed, and I have no doubt whatsoever they're working with eye discipline and responsibility in the run game, not only up front, not only at the linebacker position, but also in the secondary.
Chris, we had to go back to Pete maybe a couple weeks before LSU started the season against Southern Cal and asked him, give me a couple players you think will break out on defense, and he brought up right away Savion Jones. He said, Mike, I think this is his year to really kind of turn it on. And then he said, you know what, Braden Swenson. And he said, Mike, I think it might be his time. Boy, did he have a breakout game against South Carolina. Terrific game, put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, not only for sacks, also for pressures, but also his ability to run the field. And Pete brought that up to me. Mike, he can run. For a big man, he can really, really run. And so he was really high on Swenson and also Savion. Your thoughts on the progression of both those guys this year?
I thought they were tremendous Saturday, and you've seen them get better and better each week. And, we went into that game talking about South Carolina's edge rushers and, how LSU's offensive line, especially Emory and Will, would be able to handle those guys because, Kennard had a great career at Georgia Tech, sure, and very early in that game he made his presence known. But as the game wore on, we were talking more about the LSU edge rushers, which, again, was such a welcome sight to see, and Braden Swenson just had an incredible game. People may forget he got banged up on a couple of plays and still just kept coming back for more and had those three very important sacks. And, Savion, I think, I've called his name a bunch through the first three games of the season. And I know Coach Kevin Peoples. He was at Georgia Southern when I was there. I was excited when he was added to the staff because that's kind of his specialty. And I think Coach Peoples has done an excellent job in concert with Coach Baker and getting back to LSU style again of being aggressive, especially, rushing off the edge. And they're certainly going to need it. I mean, South Carolina, a little limited at quarterback in the sense that you kind of know what Sellers is going to do. Unfortunately, he goes down. You had a little bit of intel on Ashford from his time at Auburn, and you knew he was going to be limited throwing the ball and, look for him to run. And you're going to see quarterbacks that, again, will be dual threat. You'll see some quarterbacks that really want to use the pass and are very good at it, with games coming up. And the fact that you're now starting to have that type of havoc in the offensive backfield of your opponent is nothing but a welcome sign, I'm sure, for Tiger fans everywhere.
Caden Durham, Bobby was asking me about him. Mike, what's his background? I said, Bobby's one thing, fast. I mean, yeah. Okay, when you're one of the top sprinters in the state of Texas, and I know one thing, they got a lot of fast guys in the state of Texas. He's kind of a shortcut runner, well-built. You saw his vision. He ran up mm-hmm. the back of a couple blockers. But, man, I don't know, Chris, maybe it's me. But I see that more and more today. I think guys may be a little bit aggressive. They run up the back of a blocker, and almost like they use it like a shield, okay? I run up the back, and then, okay, where's the crease, left or right? And then they take off, either to the left or right. He did that at least three times in that game against South Carolina. Brian Kelly didn't give him the baton and say, you my guy, but – yeah, I think if he was a sophomore, he might have. But as a freshman, he was like, come on, one game, and it's not going to do it for you. I think we're still going to see running back by committee. It is what Brian Kelly has always done every stop he's been at. So you're going to see Josh Williams. You're going to see Caleb Jackson. You're going to see Caden Durham. But, man, did he make an impact and quickly on this football team. And if he gets out into the open field, good luck trying to catch him.
Early in that game, and you're exactly right, there were a couple of plays where Durham was right there on the backside of his offensive line, after the handoff. But Jacob Hester early in the game, and he knows a lot about running the football, as you and I both know. He talked about, hey, look, the offensive line's going to have to get better at opening these creases. Right. But make no mistake, against SEC defensive fronts, they're not going to be gaping holes. You're going to have these small creases that will open, and then they close quickly. And he said our running backs have just as much or maybe more responsibility, that you're going to have to get through some arm tackles. You're going to have to be able to keep moving after first contact. And as soon as Durham broke that touchdown, which, by the way, what a call by the offensive coordinator, Joe Sloan, third and nine, everybody, all 78,000 people at Williams-Brice and millions watching probably thought this is going to be Garrett Nussmeier's play to get through the air. They make that call, and Durham does exactly that. I mean, and then as the game wore on, he was breaking first contact. He was breaking second contact. And that helps out the offensive line. I mean, I think it helps them schematically. I also think it helps them with a confidence, you know, that they know they're back. If they can just give them that small sliver that they can go and do it. And really, he's the first running back this season that's been able to do that for LSU. And I agree with you. I think Coach Kelly's like, look, we got to keep this youngster hungry, so I'm not going to put the crown on him just yet. And I also think, to your point, you know, depending on down and distance, I mean, on third down, you're probably going to rely, third down in passing situations, you're going to rely on Josh Williams for his pass protection, just because he's been there and he's probably the best at doing that, although I think Caleb's gotten better. But I think you'll see, certainly Caden Durham is going to be part of the mix moving forward, and excited to see, because, again, if history means anything, he's the first freshman running back to have two rushing touchdowns against an SEC opponent since a guy by the name of Leonard Fournette in 2014.
Yeah, he was pretty good, Leonard.
Yeah, he was pretty good. So, I expect to see a lot more at Durham.
We were looking for this. There's always got to be a guy step up. And this offseason, I got to talk to him a few times at wide receiver, and that was Kyron Lacy. And he was like, man, Mr. Mike, I'm ready. I'm ready. And when you needed a play, Kyron made it for you late in the game. And so, man, I'm proud to see what he's done. He had some problems early in his career, not maybe securing a pass that was an easy catch. I think he was trying to take off with it before he actually caught it. People say he got bad hands. He doesn't have bad hands. He's got great hands. It's just that he was a little over anxious to try to get up the field with the play, and he would drop it. I think you're seeing now the emergence of Kyron Lacy here. He's not Brian Thomas Jr. He doesn't have that type of speed. He doesn't have the shiftiness of Malik Nabers. He's sort of a hybrid of both of them a little bit. But with his size, his ability to get up in the air and make a play with the ball in flight, you are watching in front of your very eyes a guy that is taking that next step.
No, he's without question to me one of the best possession receivers in the college game right now. And I think, you know, going back to his early days and a couple of key drops, I agree with you. I think it was now the game has slowed down a little bit for him. And I think he's like, to secure the ball and I'll still have time to make a cut or a quick move or a spin and get some yards after the catch. So I think he's just more confident in the game's a little slower for him. And that's why he's been so successful. And frankly, you know, when you look at what he's been able to do through the first three games, you look at how the emergence of Aaron Anderson, who, again, last year, yep, when he transferred in, he didn't look as fast as maybe his film in high school, you know, had led us to believe. And Coach Kelly told me after week one, he said, look, Aaron Anderson now knows the offense. He knows his responsibility as that slot receiver. He's running crisp routes, and he's not thinking. He's just going out and playing. And you can tell. I mean, he's an absolute burner out there. And what a huge catch he made for that 46-yard reception when the Tigers needed it in such a bad way. And then I think, you know, C.J. Daniels has done a good job, very similar to Kyron in the fact that if you're looking for something underneath or an out pattern, I mean, I think he is a stalwart receiver in that regard. If there's one thing that LSU desperately needs to get back, it's that burner.
And Chris,
of course,
Hilton.
You know, we're Chris Hilton we need. And we need, I think, a real healthy, you know, there's two, Kyle Parker is another. You know, once he's fully healthy, and you know how those injuries, yeah, are, you come off an injury, physically you may be there, but you've got to get mentally where you know you can make these cuts and you can put the weight on this leg or that leg. And once that comes around, I mean, this receiving core, for me, has been as advertised. And there, I forget, you know, Mason Taylor, who I think he's a nightmare matchup for every team we're going to face this year. I mean, when you talk about those names I just mentioned at the receiver position, who are you going to put on Mason Taylor? And I think he is deceivingly faster than most people know, because I say this all the time. I'm so used to tight ends, big targets, good hands, which Mason has, catch the ball and then stumble 4 or 5 extra yards. Mason's making the catch, and he's looking to make a cut and go. And that's what makes him so special, and that's why I think he's the LSU leader in tight end receptions now. But yeah, that receiving core is as advertised, and Garrett Nussmeier does a good job of getting the football to them, and I just think it's a defensive coordinator's nightmare. If you can add that over the top burner where Garrett, and Garrett loves that kind of throw, so give him a guy that will stretch the field, I think LSU just adds to an already dangerous set of weaponry against their opponents.
Chris, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Always appreciate it. Always great insights. And I hope for one thing. I know we're getting close to October. Man, I hope it's a really hot, humid day. Man, let UCLA come into here. Okay, people say, oh, they're used to the heat. What? Not this heat. Not this humidity. Make it a real warm day with a lot of humidity. Man, that catches you. You can be in shape, but not that type of shape, because they've never been in this type of environment, so to speak, in September in Louisiana.
I think you nailed it, Mike. I talked to Josh Lewin, who's the voice of UCLA today. He said, look, the Bruins are used to playing in big houses. 102,000 people won't intimidate them. But 91 degrees and high humidity, that's a whole nother animal. So that's what we're looking for.
Let's hope we get it Saturday afternoon. Chris, thanks so much again for joining me. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure to join you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. When we come back, we'll have on with us Ronnie Rance, former LSU baseball pitcher, also does some television work calling LSU baseball, and also he's the president and CEO of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation. They announced their 2025 inductees today. We'll have Ronnie tell us all about it right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike D'Antilio along with Cullen Steele in studio. And on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, former LSU pitcher. You hear him do television games for the Tigers. And he's also president and CEO of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation, Ronnie Rance. Ronnie, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. You had the big announcement today for the 2025 inductees to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. So I'll let you go through them.
Well, Mike, I tell you, it's the greatest job in the world, being the CEO of Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation, but the toughest job is selecting the Hall of Fame class. I'm one of 40 people who vote in August, and we announced today our 8-person Hall of Fame class for 2025. The event will take place, 3 days of events will take place the last week of June in 2025, but our classes consist of, first off, we'll start off with right there in New Orleans, Joe Sherman, the longtime head baseball coach at Delgado. He's only one, he'll now become one of only 5 father-son combinations in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. His dad, Rag Sherman, is already in. Joe's been the coach at Delgado since 1990. Dale Weiner, longtime Catholic High football coach. He's been retired. He coached the likes of Warwick Dunn, Major Applewhite, many others, kind of built that powerhouse program. He's won over 300 games in high school football in the state of Louisiana, and which is sort of a benchmark for the Hall of Fame. Andrew Whitworth, the former Man of the Year in the NFL, national champion, LSU 2003, and, of course, you watch him now on Amazon and the NFL Network and does a great job. He's going into the Hall of Fame class. Vicki Johnson, she is the last of the great Louisiana Texter basketball players, finished there in 1999, an All-American, played 13 years in the WNBA, coaches in the WNBA now. She is in the Hall. Danny Granger from New Orleans. And, of course, Ben Franklin High School, and the NBA two-time All-Star, averaged over 21 points a game 3 years in a row in the NBA, had great years with the Indiana Pacers. Danny Granger going in 2025. He's going to be joined also by April with April Burkholder. April Burkholder would be on the Mount Rushmore of LSU gymnasts. She was a great gymnast, a multiple All-American national champion. She's already in the LSU Hall of Fame. She's going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Two more people to tell you about. George Bobby Swallow won a national championship multiple times as a boxer at LSU in the 50s when they had boxing.
We were looking for this. There's always got to be a guy step up. And this offseason, I got to talk to him a few times at wide receiver, and that was Kyron Lacy. And he was like, man, Mr. Mike, I'm ready. I'm ready. And when you needed a play, Kyron made it for you late in the game. And so, man, I'm proud to see what he's done. He had some problems early in his career, not maybe securing a pass that was an easy catch. I think he was trying to take off with it before he actually caught it. People say he got bad hands. He doesn't have bad hands. He's got great hands. It's just that he was a little over anxious to try to get up the field with the play, and he would drop it. I think you're seeing now the emergence of Kyron Lacy here. He's not Brian Thomas Jr. He doesn't have that type of speed. He doesn't have the shiftiness of Malik Nabers. He's sort of a hybrid of both of them a little bit. But with his size, his ability to get up in the air and make a play with the ball in flight, you are watching in front of your very eyes a guy that is taking that next step.
No, he's without question to me one of the best possession receivers in the college game right now. And I think, you know, going back to his early days and a couple of key drops, I agree with you. I think it was now the game has slowed down a little bit for him. And I think he's like, to secure the ball, and I'll still have time to make a cut or a quick move or a spin and get some yards after the catch. So I think he's just more confident in the game's a little slower for him, and that's why he's been so successful. And frankly, you know, when you look at what he's been able to do through the first three games, you look at how the emergence of Aaron Anderson, who, again, last year, yep, when he transferred in, he didn't look as fast as maybe his film in high school, you know, had led us to believe. And Coach Kelly told me after week one, he said, look, Aaron Anderson now knows the offense. He knows his responsibility as that slot receiver. He's running crisp routes, and he's not thinking. He's just going out and playing. And you can tell. I mean, he's an absolute burner out there. And what a huge catch he made for that 46-yard reception when the Tigers needed it in such a bad way. And then I think, you know, C.J. Daniels has done a good job, very similar to Kyron in the fact that if you're looking for something underneath or an out pattern, I mean, I think he is a stalwart receiver in that regard. If there's one thing that LSU desperately needs to get back, it's that burner.
And Chris,
of course,
Hilton.
You know, we're Chris Hilton we need. And we need, I think, a real healthy, you know, there's two, Kyle Parker is another. You know, once he's fully healthy, and you know how those injuries, yeah, are, you come off an injury, physically you may be there, but you've got to get mentally where you know you can make these cuts and you can put the weight on this leg or that leg. And once that comes around, I mean, this receiving core, for me, has been as advertised. And there I forget, you know, Mason Taylor, who I think he's a nightmare matchup for every team we're going to face this year. I mean, when you talk about those names I just mentioned at the receiver position, who are you going to put on Mason Taylor? And I think he is deceivingly faster than most people know. Because I say this all the time. I'm so used to tight ends, big targets, good hands, which Mason has, you know, catch the ball and then stumble 4 or 5 extra yards. Mason's making the catch, and he's looking to make a cut and go. And that's what makes him so special, and that's why I think he's the, you know, LSU leader in tight end receptions now. But, yeah, that receiving core is as advertised. And, you know, Garrett Nussmeier does a good job of getting the football to them. And I just think it's a defensive coordinator's nightmare. If you can add that over-the-top burner where Garrett, and you know Garrett loves that kind of throw, so give him a guy that will stretch the field, I think LSU just adds to an already dangerous set of weaponry against their opponents.
Chris, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. Always appreciate it. Always great insights. And I hope for one thing. I know we're getting close to October. Man, I hope it's a really hot, humid day. Man, let UCLA come into here. Okay, people say, oh, they're used to the heat. What? Not this heat. Not this humidity. Make it a real warm day with a lot of humidity. Because, man, that catches you. You can be in shape, but not that type of shape. because they've never been in this type of environment, so to speak, in September in Louisiana.
I think you nailed it, Mike. I talked to Josh Lewin, who's the voice of UCLA today. He said, look, the Bruins are used to playing in big houses. 102,000 people won't intimidate them. But 91 degrees and high humidity, that's a whole nother animal. So that's what we're looking for.
Let's hope we get it Saturday afternoon. Chris, thanks so much again for joining me. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure to join you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. When we come back, we'll have on with us Ronnie Rance, former LSU baseball pitcher, also does some television work calling LSU baseball, and also he's the president and CEO of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation. They announced their 2025 inductees today. We'll have Ronnie tell us all about it right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Cullen Steele in studio. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, former LSU pitcher. You hear him do television games for the Tigers. And he's also president and CEO of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation, Ronnie Rance. Ronnie, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. You had the big announcement today for the 2025 inductees to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. So I'll let you go through them.
Well, Mike, I tell you, it's the greatest job in the world, being the CEO of Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation, but the toughest job is selecting the Hall of Fame class. I'm one of 40 people who vote in August, and we announced today our 8-person Hall of Fame class for 2025. The event will take place, 3 days of events will take place the last week of June in 2025, but our classes consist of, first off, we'll start off with right there in New Orleans, Joe Sherman, the longtime head baseball coach at Delgado. He'll now become one of only 5 father-son combinations in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. His dad, Rag Sherman, is already in. Joe's been the coach at Delgado since 1990. Dale Weiner, longtime Catholic High football coach. He's been retired. He coached the likes of Warwick Dunn, Major Applewhite, many others, kind of built that powerhouse program. He's won over 300 games in high school football in the state of Louisiana, and which is sort of a benchmark for the Hall of Fame. Andrew Whitworth, the former Man of the Year in the NFL, national champion, LSU 2003, and of course, you watch him now on Amazon and the NFL Network and does a great job. He's going into the Hall of Fame class. Vicki Johnson, she is the last of the great Louisiana Texter basketball players, finished there in 1999, an All-American, played 13 years in the WNBA, coaches in the WNBA now. She is in the Hall. Danny Granger from New Orleans. And, of course, Ben Franklin High School, and the NBA two-time All-Star, averaged over 21 points a game 3 years in a row in the NBA, had great years with the Indiana Pacers. Danny Granger going in 2025. He's going to be joined also with April Burkholder. April Burkholder would be on the Mount Rushmore of LSU gymnasts. She was a great gymnast, a multiple All-American national champion. She's already in the LSU Hall of Fame. She's going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Two more people to tell you about. George Bobby Swallow won a national championship multiple times as a boxer at LSU in the 50s when they had boxing. 3-time national champion in his weight division there. Went on to be a high school coach in football for many years over in the Ville Platte area. And then lastly, Danny Broussard, who is 6th in America right now as a high school basketball coach at St. Thomas More. He is currently 6th in the country, still coaching, still very active, still going to win numerous more games. He's going in 2025. And, oh, by the way, in the state of Louisiana, they currently have the number 3 coach, Charles Smith, who went in 2019. He's the head coach at Peabody. So the state of Louisiana has the number 3 and number 6. Winning as high school basketball coaches in America. And, oh, by the way, both of them are still active.
Wow. Danny is Ricky Broussard. You know, people on the bayou know Ricky because Ricky, I think that's his younger brother. Because Ricky coached at Nicholls State, coached at LSU, was an assistant coach there, but was the head coach with the Colonels for so many years. So I'm glad to see Danny getting in. He has put up some unbelievable numbers, and I knew with Danny Granger, he would eventually get in. I talked to a couple people who had votes on it, and they told me, you know, he's got to get in there. But just how difficult that is, Ronnie, from a standpoint of how many people actually get nominated from this, and kind of the process of weeding it down to if it's 8 or 10 that go in each year.
So this year there were probably about 150 people, 150 to 160 people that made it to the initial ballot. And the initial ballot is already somewhat weaned through, because you can go online at lasportshall.com, go check out lasportshall.com to learn more about these Hall of Famers and others. But you can go on there and click on the Hall of Fame tab, and it'll show you how to nominate a candidate. Well, just because you nominate somebody doesn't mean they end up on the official ballot. So to just get to the ballot is impressive. And then from the 150, 160 people person name, we wean that down to about 50 through our Hall of Fame Foundation Board and all the sports writers for the LSWA. They vote in the month of July and early August. And then from that, we get to about a 50-person, 60-person list. And then we have a 40-person meeting. And this year was in Baton Rouge at LSU, and it's made up of sports writers and broadcasters. It's made up of past Hall of Famers, some of our current board members as well. And those 40 people select the 8-person class. And it's very much like selecting a pope in the Vatican. And you go in a room, everybody's got their favorites, and then the white smoke comes up, and there's your list.
Ronnie, Bob and I talk about this all the time. It is one of the real hidden gems in the state of Louisiana, Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in Natchitoches. One, Natchitoches, man, you go there in the fall, it is gorgeous to go there. But to see the Hall of Fame there, the Sports Hall of Fame, if you haven't done it, take a trip there. It is really something to see. And for a lot of people, some of the players that are in there, men and women, you would have no idea they have a connection to the state of Louisiana. We are so correct. Blessed in this area to have so many talented young men and women that have gone on to either coach or to play at the highest level. And it's such a great facility to go to in Natchitoches.
No, you're right. It's by the way, the museum is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4:30 p.m. And it's right on the banks of the Cane River. And obviously the best time of the year to go to Natchitoches, Louisiana, is the weekend before Thanksgiving all the way till the first of the year. During that 6-7 weeks is when the Christmas lights are lit up, and it's just spectacular. But there's so many greats. We know about football, baseball, basketball stars. It's the other sports that, to me, those human interest stories are the most amazing.
Ronnie, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. We'll have you back on to talk a little bit more about it as it gets closer. But another great class. Guys do a fantastic job. And again, you know, I don't live close to Natchitoches, so to speak. I still live on the bayou. But it is one of the real gems in this state to go visit, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Sports fan, non-sports fan, to go over there. And what you said, late November into December, man, it is really nice.
Yeah, it really is. Well, thank you for having me on the phone. Really appreciate it. And we look forward to honoring those Hall of Famers next June. And folks can go to lasportshall.com for more info. We'll have tickets on sale in a few weeks as well.
Thank you, Ronnie. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All righty. Ronnie Rance, former LSU baseball pitcher, also does baseball coverage on television for LSU, and is the president and CEO of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation. And you can find out all that information. Go to LouisianaSportsHallOfFame.com and get all that of all the people that are in there. We'll come back and finish it off here in hour number one right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Cullen Steele in studio. And on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, former LSU pitcher,
You hear him do television games for the Tigers, and he's also president and CEO of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation, Ronnie Rantz. Ronnie, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. You had the big announcement today for the 2025 inductees to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, so I'll let you go through them.
Well, Mike, I tell you, it's the greatest job in the world, being the CEO of Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation, but the toughest job is selecting the Hall of Fame class. I'm one of 40 people who vote in August, and we announced today our 8-person Hall of Fame class for 2025. The event will take place, 3 days of events will take place the last week of June in 2025, but our classes consist of, first off, we'll start off with right there in New Orleans, Joe Sherman, the longtime head baseball coach at Delgado. He's only one, he'll now become one of only 5 father-son combinations in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. His dad, Rag Sherman, is already in. Joe's been the coach at Delgado since 1990. Dale Weiner, longtime Catholic High football coach. He's been retired. He coached the likes of Warwick Dunn, Major Applewhite, many others, kind of built that powerhouse program. He's won over 300 games in high school football in the state of Louisiana, and which is sort of a benchmark for the Hall of Fame. Andrew Whitworth, the former Man of the Year in the NFL, national champion, LSU 2003, and of course, you watch him now on Amazon and the NFL Network and does a great job. He's going into the Hall of Fame class. Vicky Johnson, she is the last of the great Louisiana Texter basketball players, finished there in 1999, an All-American, played 13 years in the WNBA, coaches in the WNBA now. She is in the Hall. Danny Granger from New Orleans. And, of course, Ben Franklin High School, NBA two-time All-Star, averaged over 21 points a game 3 years in a row in the NBA, had great years with the Indiana Pacers. Danny Granger going in 2025. He's going to be joined also by April Burkholder. April Burkholder would be on the Mount Rushmore of LSU gymnasts. She was a great gymnast, a multiple All-American national champion. She's already in the LSU Hall of Fame. She's going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Two more people to tell you about. George Bobby Swallow won a national championship multiple times as a boxer at LSU in the 50s when they had boxing. 3-time national champion in his weight division there. Went on to be a high school coach in football for many years over in the Ville Platte area. And then lastly, Danny Broussard, who is 6th in America right now as a high school basketball coach at St. Thomas More. He is currently 6th in the country, still coaching, still very active, still going to win numerous more games. He's going in 2025. And, oh, by the way, in the state of Louisiana, they currently have the number 3 coach, Charles Smith, who went in 2019. He's the head coach at Peabody. So the state of Louisiana has the number 3 and number 6. Winning as high school basketball coaches in America. And, oh, by the way, both of them are still active.
Wow. Danny is Ricky Broussard. You know, people on the bayou know Ricky because Ricky, I think that's his younger brother. Because Ricky coached at Nicholls State, coached at LSU, was an assistant coach there, but was the head coach with the Colonels for so many years. So I'm glad to see Danny getting in. He has put up some unbelievable numbers, and I knew with Danny Granger he would eventually get in. I talked to a couple people who had votes on it, and they told me, you know, he's got to get in there. But just how difficult that is, Ronnie, from a standpoint of how many people actually get nominated from this and kind of the process of weeding it down to if it's 8 or 10 that go in each year?
So this year there were probably about 150 people, 150 to 160 people that made it to the initial ballot. And the initial ballot is already somewhat weaned through because you can go online at lasportshall.com. Go check out lasportshall.com to learn more about these Hall of Famers and others. But you can go on there and click on the Hall of Fame tab, and it'll show you how to nominate a candidate. Well, just because you nominate somebody doesn't mean they end up on the official ballot. So to just get to the ballot is impressive. And then from the 150, 160 person name, we wean that down to about 50 through our Hall of Fame Foundation Board and all the sports writers for the LSWA. They vote in the month of July and early August, and then from that we get to about a 50-person, 60-person list, and then we have a 40-person meeting. And this year was in Baton Rouge at LSU. It's made up of sports writers and broadcasters. It's made up of past Hall of Famers, some of our current board members as well. And those 40 people select the 8-person class. And it's very much like selecting a pope in the Vatican. And you go in a room, everybody's got their favorites, and then the white smoke comes up, and there's your list.
Ronnie, Bob and I talk about this all the time. It is one of the real hidden gems in the state of Louisiana, Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in Natchitoches. One, Natchitoches, man, you go there in the fall. It is gorgeous to go there. But to see the Hall of Fame there, the Sports Hall of Fame, if you haven't done it, take a trip there. It is really something to see. And for a lot of people, some of the players that are in there, men and women, you would have no idea they have a connection to the state of Louisiana. We are so correct. Blessed in this area to have so many talented young men and women that have gone on to either coach or to play at the highest level. And it's such a great facility to go to in Natchitoches.
No, you're right. It's by the way, the museum is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4:30 p.m. And it's right on the banks of the Cane River. And obviously the best time of the year to go to Natchitoches, Louisiana, is the weekend before Thanksgiving all the way till the first of the year. During that 6-7 weeks is when the Christmas lights are lit up, and it's just spectacular. But there's so many greats. We know about football, baseball, basketball stars. It's the other sports that, to me, those human interest stories are the most amazing.
Ronnie, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. We'll have you back on to talk a little bit more about it as it gets closer. But another great class. Guys do a fantastic job. And again, I don't live close to Natchitoches, so to speak. I still live on the bayou. But it is one of the real gems in this state to go visit, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Sports fan, non-sports fan, to go over there. And what you said, late November into December, man, it is really nice.
Yeah, it really is. Well, thank you for having me on the phone. Really appreciate it. And we look forward to honoring those Hall of Famers next June. And folks can go to lasportshall.com for more info. We'll have tickets on sale in a few weeks as well.
Thank you, Ronnie. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All righty. Ronnie Rance, former LSU baseball pitcher, also does baseball coverage on television for LSU, and is the president and CEO of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame Foundation. And you can find out all that information. Go to LouisianaSportsHallOfFame.com and get all that of all the people that are in there. We'll come back and finish it off here in hour number one right after this break.